Hi guys, I'm Nick Bester. I'm the founder of Best Athletics, and I've got a very speedy guest with us today. He came flying past me at London Marathon. In fact, he passed me so quickly, it looked like I was looking for parking. Next thing I blinked and Cole was miles ahead. Cole, I can't wait to unpack your London Marathon race. Your training was phenomenal. I was following it quite closely. I think a lot of us were, and race day honestly went even better. You executed a marathon as if you've done 100 of these before, never mind your debut. So just to remind you, he finished his debut marathon at London in 2:16:52 on a very warm day. Clearly he wasn't too affected by the heat, finishing 25th overall and exceeding, I think, his expectations. He was shocked at the end. You know, we all thought he would do very well. A couple of doubters thought maybe not sub 2:20 in his first one, but he absolutely smashed it out the park. Cole, want to talk us through how it was? Maybe I'll take some tips and advice for myself even. Just speak through your whole race experience a bit.
Well, thank you very much for that wonderful introduction to start off with. And what a day. What a fantastic day. Easily the best day of my life so far. If I could relive one day, it would be London Marathon 2025. Maybe a fluke. Who knows? We'll see when I attempt marathon number two, whether it was a fluke or whether I'm just naturally good at these things. We'll see. But with the heat and I always seem to lose a little bit of mental confidence kind of in the taper as well. And I think that actually kind of played into my hands a little bit in terms of I went in with like maybe a little bit lacking in confidence. So I went off a little bit conservative. So then when I felt good at about 10K into the race and then started to wind the race up a little bit, start to build through it, that kind of classic negative split, it started to play into my hands a little bit. And then this kind of natural battle of the YouTuber thing that people had started to kind of bring up a little bit when I realized that I'd dropped Ben a little bit, that gave me a little bit of a confidence boost. And then obviously I could see you in your bright blue and white Best Athletics singlet, so I could see you like quite far out in front. And then sorry to say, obviously, because it's your podcast, but then when I could see you getting a little bit closer to me, obviously I was like thinking about that, oh, there's Nick. Obviously he's on for 2:18, so I knew roughly what sort of pace I was going just based off of where I was in relation to you. So then when I went past you, I was like, oh, actually, am I going a little bit too quick? Just try to listen to my body. I feel like I do a lot of my training to effort and heart rate and that sort of thing. So I feel like I'm not the most naturally gifted runner. I don't always naturally I don't come out with these massive sessions. They're not sessions that always indicate that I could perform something massive on race day. But one thing I do seem to always get right is justifying or judging my effort correctly on race day. Even if it's a bit slower sometimes or a bit quicker, I always seem to get like pretty good splits. What a fantastic day. And just didn't really feel like the wheels were going to come off at any stage, really.
Amazing. No, honestly, you looked so strong when you came flying past me. And I know a lot of people were targeting London Marathon, and especially like a lot of, you know, content creators and YouTubers. And I sort of, there was, you know, a bit of built up competition between me, you, Ben, so on and so forth. You obviously absolutely shot the lights out. But I think, you know, a while back you did a who was the fastest YouTuber video that I remember seeing like a couple of years ago. But now you're well in the mix and have exceeded so many more. So yeah, I think maybe I should make it, because you're too fast to make it yourself now. It might be a bit biased, but we'll definitely tap into that one again.
Oh, I was going to say, that's the problem now is because there's so many more professional athletes at the YouTube. So people like Clayton Young and Rory Linkletter, whether you could class those as proper YouTubers or not, it just makes it's a much more depressing video for me to make now because I'm even further down the list. But
Alex Yee is on YouTube as well. I mean, it's probably a matter of time before, you know, everyone's on YouTube. So, but it's cool to see. It's really, you know, it gives us good insights and I love it and encourage it. So you seem to be like really in touch with your metrics when you're running. Are you looking at heart rates? Are you looking at power? Or is it just sort of like, you know, from your sessions, how you're feeling and this is how you should feel, and at the end of it, you've exerted the best amount of energy possible?
Yes, I like to go into sessions already knowing what sort of effort I'm going for, what sort of heart rate I should be aiming for. So for example, today I did a lactate threshold one session, which is basically having done a lab test that gave me that I should be running around 164 beats per minute for the pace at which I start to produce lactate, but my body's able to recycle it efficiently. So I know that no matter if I'm uphill or if it's hot or if it's cold, or it's super windy, it doesn't really matter what the pace is saying. I just go off heart rate because my body doesn't know pace. It just knows physiological demand, in which case heart rate. And I use the same for the marathon. I knew that My max heart rate is somewhere around 200 beats per minute. I knew that for my half marathon, I maxed out at around 180 to 185 beats per minute. So if I'm getting anywhere near that in the first half of the marathon, I'm going way too quick, even though it was a hot day. But yeah, so I never listen to just one metric on its own. So I'm always generally comparing pace with heart rate and effort. They're the three I typically use. I've never really used power. I think that's more of a cycling thing. Or if you've got a foot pod, I think you can use power, but it's not really something I've really paid too much attention, maybe in the future. But yeah, heart rate is a massive thing for me. And I'd highly recommend anyone from a beginner runner to like an elite runner, getting into a lab, because then if you can get your zone sorted, it makes training so easy. Because it just takes the guesswork out. It's like, oh, I've got a bit of a cold. Okay, not 100% feeling great. Cool. I'll just go off the heart rate. No worries. And it doesn't matter how fast or quick you go in your body, it knows what to do.
Amazing, amazing, cool. So, yeah, like a lot more like educated and technical to a degree, but just staying in tune with your metrics. And what sort of heart rates were you using on race day, and how often, sorry, heart rate monitor were you using on race day, and how often were you checking it? Like every 500 meters, every kilometer, every now and then?
Yeah, so I use the Coros Arm heart rate monitor. I used to use like a chest strap, but I used to find I used to get kind of like some chafing around the chest and stuff, no matter if I used like a balm or anything. So I use the arm strap from Coros, which I just find is perfect. Obviously, I don't know if you really ever know if it's out of sync or not, but it always seems to be 100% accurate for me. I wasn't really actively checking it like at regular intervals. The most frequent I would say is every mile, just when I manually lapped my watch. But I actually lost track of where I was sometimes because the mile markers were so difficult to see in the crowds. So actually, sometimes I would lap my watch and it would actually be like 3 miles have passed rather than just one. So I maybe checked my heart rate maybe 15, 20 times across the race.
Okay, cool. And yeah, I mean, one of the most common questions I get asked, I'm sure you get asked a lot of the time as well, having switched from a chest strap heart rate monitor to this Coros arm strap monitor, which I use as well, is whether you find it just as accurate. And my answer to that is probably yes. I used the chest strap for, 4 or 5 years. I used the Garmin Heart Rate Pro Plus chest strap, which was great. But I actually left mine on a train, and I had this from an advert I did with Coros a while back, and I started using it, and I actually thought, wow, this is a lot more comfortable. It's more convenient. I'm used to it now, and I find it just as accurate as well. So yeah, it's cool to hear that you find it quite accurate. And for those wanting to know, we both find it fairly accurate. Okay, so you first came out at the start of your training block and announced that okay, you're finally ready to up it to the marathon, and you sort of was like you set a tentative sub 220 because you're like, it's quite bold, especially in your first one. It's sort of, where a lot of the sub elites targets and stuff like that. Obviously, I had seven cracks before cracking it first time. You just came along and smashed it. So kudos to you. But your training really progressed quite nicely throughout. Like you started reaching higher heights. You won a big half marathon in the build up, running 65 minutes and recovered really well. You were putting in massive mileage, hitting your session. So I think as time went on, it sort of signified, okay, cool. You could probably, on a really good performance run, like a 218 or something like that. You shot the lights out even more than that. So going into the race, what were your expectations? Did you think on an amazing day, you can go 218-ish and you just had an incredible day? Or did you actually think, I can go 2:16:52 if I have a really good day, and that's what played out.
Yeah, I think that's the classic thing, is because so many people shoot for sub 220 that I'd kind of picked that as the goal, just because it seemed to be people that were at a similar level to me, that's what they typically aimed for. So I knew going into the race I'd be somewhere between 2:16 on an absolutely perfect day, everything goes right, or 2:24 if maybe I don't have my day. I knew I'd be somewhere in that zone, and I didn't really know what to expect because it's not just double a half marathon, if that makes sense. Like, there's so many more variables in a marathon compared to a half marathon. And it could be that you're an insane 5:10K half marathon runner, but your physiology doesn't quite match up over the marathon. So I went in kind of slap bang in the middle with 220. And to be honest, I use people like yourself as a gauge, going, okay, our 5K PBs are very similar. Our 10K PBs are very similar. How can I, well, I then used you as like a gauge, like, oh, they've just broken 220. Maybe if I put in a good block of training like I ended up doing, That maybe sub 220 is possible, maybe like a 219. I think, to be completely honest, 216 was not in my mind before the race. I thought maybe 218 was possible because I'd spoken with Ellis Cross, who doesn't coach me, but he definitely assists me in my running, if that makes sense. So if I have any questions, I ask him, and he was saying maybe go out a little bit more conservative because it's better to run a negative split. And in my head, because he told me to run through the first half in 6:9:45. I was like, oh, even with a negative split, I'm only going to come out with a 2:18. So I thought maybe that was the best I was going to get on the day. But then when I went through halfway in 6:9 dead, after listening to my body, it felt insane over Tower Bridge. It was just one of those things that at that point I knew I was on for a really, really good time. And I've just always been one of these people that my training never suggests I'm going to do anything that impressive on race day. But then for some reason, I don't know if just the atmosphere or highly caffeinated or the bicarb or whatever it is, I just seem to put it out of the bag on race day in comparison to my training. So like maybe like a super compensator.
That's amazing. You know what? Rather that way, where you pull it out on race day, then you the runner that absolutely smashes training and then obviously struggles on race day. So you've got the right combination. And I know that there is quite a few people like that that's, pull it out the bag on race day. And I think a big thing to your credit is that you're actually in tune with what you know you're capable of, and you're not maximizing your efforts in training. From what I've seen, you obviously put a massive shift in that last rep where you blow the smoke out the water and stuff. But that doesn't stay in your body for too long. So you're actually working at, LT1, LT2, you're sort of capping efforts at 95% time and time again, and only really maxing out on race day, and you're able to get a lot more out of race day. But just to put things into perspective for a lot of listeners out there, so you won your half marathon in the build up in 65 minutes, and then you sort of penciled in going through halfway in 69 minutes. So that was pretty much 4 minutes slower than what you had won your half marathon in. And the first half of London is slightly net downhill. You're more tapered. You're probably in slightly better shape by then as well. So that just puts things into perspective that, it's a solid four and a bit minutes for you. And if you take into account the how much you progressed after then the taper factor and stuff, you're looking at 5 or 6 minutes. So that's why you probably went through halfway in that time feeling comfortable. Honestly, you executed such a good race. Okay, so in the training for the marathon, it was your first ever marathon build. And you put everything on Strava, I think from what I saw, which is quite nice. How did you find you built up very consistently and hit 200 kilometer weeks? I know there's other runners in this world doing crazy mileage, like ran to Japan, Jake guy is just doing massive amounts of mileage. How did you find when you started going over 200 kilometer weeks? Or did you find actually it felt the same in the beginning? Your body had just adapted and adjusted because you were taking recovery quite seriously in between too.
Yeah, see, I've always loved running high mileage, and I love to train that way. That's part of the reason I don't have a coach is quite often because a lot of coaches might not necessarily recommend doing that sort of mileage. I like to kind of just do what feels most natural to me. And actually, funny enough that you mentioned Jake, he was someone that kind of almost showed me that actually it doesn't matter. All these people that are going to tell you you're running too much or you're doing junk miles, they don't matter. So I started doing the training that I'd wanted to do for a very long time, started fueling it effectively. And once you go above kind of that sort of 100 mile weeks into like 200 kilometer per week, you never feel fresh, but you also never feel completely in the bin. It's like you develop this really nice durability that, yeah, you don't do any 10 out of 10 sessions, but you know that even when you're the most tired, you can still pull it out because you've just got this really nice strength and durability. And you'll always get the job done. And that's the main difference I felt between kind of going above 100 miles a week and then going all the way up to 200 kilometers per week, is that the sessions are always B plus sessions. I don't know if I had a single bad session. I didn't have too many fantastic 10 out of 10 perfect sessions, if that makes sense. But yeah, I just love to run. I love to run high mileage. Sometimes they might be considered junk miles, but I don't care. Mentally, physically, I feel good. And I listen to my body. If I need a rest day, I'll take one. But yeah.
Okay, I think you're very different to other runners from the point of view that if you're doing 250 Ks that week, you've got absolutely no problem, you love it. Whereas another runner listening might have to do about 100 Ks a week, but they struggle for the motivation, they struggle to get out there. So what's different in your mind? Do you just find that you zone out, it's good for your mental health, you're in your own world? I'm sort of like that in a way. Sometimes I get so into a trance that, I don't even know I'm running or there's human beings around. It's like it's your time to zone out away from your phone, away from this fast-paced world we live in. But what advice would you give to someone that's struggling for motivation, that's struggling to show up? Like, how can such high mileage for you be such an easy and mentally cleansing thing to do?
Yeah, I mean, to unpack that a little bit, running for me is my number one main hobby. Nothing else in my life comes close to it. If I'm bored, the first thing I think of doing is going for a run. There was a few things leading into London Marathon that played a part into me actually just taking the dive into that mileage. I had a breakup at the start of January, so I had a lot more time on my hands and a lot more, I guess, like mental battles that I wanted to go through. And running is like the perfect place to do that. No one else can get to you. Your phone is either at home or it's in your pocket. No one is like requesting your time, and it just gave me the perfect place to kind of face my demons, if you like, and go through things in my head. So that was like, I used it as a coping mechanism also, but I also used it as a way of, well, it's, as I said, it's my main hobby. So that's my catharsis. That's what brings me joy. I know that if I get to the end of the evening and I've worked hard, and that might only be 10K in that day, or it might be 40K in that day. If I get to the end of the day and feel like I've put a proper good shift in, then I feel good in myself. And then I find it bleeds into every other aspect of my life. Suddenly my work goes well. Suddenly my social media goes well. My relationship with my family goes well and things like that. In terms of other people that may be struggling for motivation, or they see people like myself hitting big mileage and they want to do that but maybe can't, I would say that ultimately at the end of the day, it is just a number on a screen, and they can get the same sort of physiological effect on their body comparative to me getting it out of my body for them, because 100K for them might be far more demanding than 200K for me. And that's the main thing you got to remember, is that ultimately it is a number on a screen, and we could do the same amount of training, just my volume is higher, if that makes sense, in terms of actual kilometers. So I always compare it to like triathletes. So yes, I might be running for 15 hours a week, they might only be running for 10, and I might run a lot more kilometers than them, but they're doing 30 hours of training. So just because my kilometers or my miles is actually higher doesn't mean our time doing training is any different. It just means that just because I'm that little bit fitter at running, maybe I've just covered more distance in that time. They might go to the gym, or they might do Pilates instead. There's loads of different ways of improving your running and improving fitness. I just tend to go running first, and then everything else comes second. And that might bite me on the bum at some point in the future. But yeah, and it's taken years to get to this point. I didn't just suddenly wake up and do 200K per week. It's taken a long time to get here.
For sure. I think, yeah, thanks so much for sharing that with us. And I can definitely relate from the point of view that when you're working hard in running, it's sort of like keeping you honest, and then you work harder in other aspects of your life as well. Because running is hard for all of us. So if you're able to nail that, then hard work becomes not that hard in many ways. So yeah, take the mentality you learned in running, that stubborn runner's mentality, apply that to life. And honestly, you know, you'll be successful in life. That's for sure. Okay. So basically, also another really good takeaway from that is that on Strava, there's people we can follow. A lot of people show their journey, and it's so easy to compare yourself to others these days, and all that information is there for us. But I think what we must realize is that we're all so different. We all have different time commitments and stuff like that. So follow those that inspire you, take bits and pieces that you learn from them, but apply it to yourself, and never try and, you know, outdo them or something like that, because that's when it starts taking the enjoyment out. Just try and be the best possible you that you can be. Then moving forward, so you say running is your go-to, your one true love. You increased your mileage significantly. I think a lot of people out there are wondering, how did you remain relatively injury-free or completely injury-free? You're a chiro yourself, so you're in sort of the professional space. You're a running coach, so you're obviously very educated on that point as well. Did you do any significant or any more strength work or any strength work at all in the build-up and in order to remain injury-free throughout this training block?
Yeah, so in terms of injury free, I would say I've been blessed with being quite a robust runner. I don't really pick up niggles too frequently. I'm quite often running pain free, which is a really, really lucky position to be in. I know that some people don't have that luxury. In terms of strength work, I do 2 strength sessions per week. And to be honest, they're the bane of my life. I absolutely hate them, but I know that they're absolutely necessary so that I can then do the running that I want to do. So the 2 best videos that I've ever seen with regards to strength training, and as you said, yeah, I'm an osteopath, so I've learned a lot of this stuff myself, but actually these videos are better than any sort of plan I would have put together for myself anyway. So there's a video on YouTube by Sam Parsons, and there's also a video by Jakob Ingebrigtsen. Obviously, no need for introductions there. where they go through their strength and conditioning routines, and I basically made a blend of the two. And they're just really, really good in terms of actual running specific S&C. For example, if you're doing a single leg like lunge, for example, you don't need to lunge super deep because you don't do that when you run. So it's not very specific. And that's when other injuries arise. So yeah, I like to make it super specific. I want to get as much bang for my buck as possible when it comes to the strength work because I don't want to be doing it. And yeah, that's pretty much it. But the other thing that I'd say contributes to me staying injury free is I invest a lot of money in supplements. I don't really get any sent to me for free. It's like kind of endorsements or anything like that. I just buy the ones that I want to take. So I'd say the main one for me that I think makes a huge, huge difference is iron. Since I've been taking that over the last 6 months, I've just found my energy levels and my performances have just changed dramatically, but also magnesium biglycinate and calcium tablets as well. Again, I'm not a nutritionist, but they're things that I found anecdotally that work really well for me.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing. I think on that point, it's also very easy to get blood tests done. You can do it in the comfort of your own home these days. So if someone's unsure if they're lacking anything or lacking energy, like get those blood tests done. That's sort of the gold standard. You see what you're lacking and you top up in those points. And as we both know, previously my iron levels were low. So I topped up in that area and I was like a complete different person. I was so energized. So sometimes it's those very small things that go a long way. But very cool to know that, you know, you're following people that the world's best, let's say, taking bits and pieces from it, utilizing it for yourself and you know, putting it together in a plan that works best for you. And very good points about the running specific runner's strength is very different from a normal gym goer's strength or what you might see on a trending reel on TikTok or Instagram and stuff like that. So try and make it specific to your weaknesses and specific to running and yeah, you'll go a long way. Okay, so I put up an Instagram poll for a few people to ask a few questions. Quite a lot of questions are coming up in these. Some of them are from myself as well, so a combination of the both. But people are, yeah, a lot of people are just interested to know in like, what was your first ever 5K time when you got into running?
So I've been running since about the age of 11. And to be honest, I was not a naturally gifted runner. I wasn't very good when I first started. It took me, well, only in the last kind of couple years have I kind of, I guess, started to get into like the sub-elite sort of range. I never really ran or never really won competitions when I was at school or anything like that. I just enjoyed it. My first ever 5K, I did a park run. We used to go for dance lessons, me and my family. And then this one time we were driving along the seafront and there was this group of runners. And I said, like, what is that? Like, I want to be part of that. I want to do that. So then the next week, my parents took me and it was park run. And I did my first 5K. I went absolutely eyes out. And I did 23:01, which actually is pretty decent as a first 5K. But it took me years to beat that again. Absolutely years, because for some reason, I just like, I guess a bit with the marathon. Hopefully it's not similar with that, but got it right first time around. And then, yeah, it took me a year. I think I then was doing like 24, 25, 26s before I get anywhere close to that 23 again. But yeah, that was my first 5K.
Amazing. Just remind us, what's your age at the moment?
So I'm 24.
Okay. Wow. So your peak years definitely lie ahead of you. That's for sure. Okay. Now, this is, yeah, a question that someone asked. I'm also very interested to know. So obviously you've got a full-time job as an osteo. You're a running coach yourself. We're both in the content creation space, and as we know, that can be very time consuming. Often, you know, a 10-minute YouTube video or 15-minute YouTube video can take almost a day to edit. How are you finding balancing content creating versus full-time job versus your own training, especially when you're putting in as much training? And do you find that content creating and your YouTube channel that's like, you know, rocking at the moment, do you find that that actually helps motivate you and helps your running and has good synergy? Or does it take away a little bit of your running, but you know it's important for the bigger scheme of things?
So I would say there's a few things I would say for that. The first thing is that I'm a runner first and foremost. The content will always come second. So that sometimes means that videos might take a little bit longer to get out because I'm not going to sacrifice my training for editing. That's just not one thing that I'm prepared to do. I would also say that actually being a runner, content creator, having a full-time job does also have some negative impacts on your life outside of that. So for example, sometimes I might not see my mum as much 1 week because I've just been in my bedroom just doing content or been out training or at work. In terms of balancing the three, I'm probably in the best place suited to do that because, as you said, I'm an osteopath. So my work is very much revolved around when I have patients booked in and when I don't. So I'm in charge of my own diary. So for example, this morning I worked from 6 till 10. I then had a 2 hour gap to go and do my first training session between 10 and 12. I've then worked 12 till 3. I'm then doing this podcast. I'm then working again 4 till 6, and then I've got a track session this evening. So I'm able to kind of allow people to book in to see me as an osteopath around my training, as obviously as long as I'm getting the work in. And then my evenings are spent editing, recording videos, or doing some running coaching. But yeah, I pretty much work at least some hours every single day of the week, and that's something that I'm looking to maybe address in future, just because I don't want to look back in 10 years' time and go, oh, if only I dedicated a little bit more time to training or a little bit more time to content creation. So that's something I'm trying to look at the moment. But yeah, as I said, it all looks like kind of fun and games from the side. But yeah, there are definitely some negative impacts from these sorts of things. And I'm sure as a family man yourself, you understand the exact same thing in terms of you might not want to edit a video because you'd rather go and spend time with your wife and your daughters. And I think that's the really important balance to strike. And yeah, I've definitely got that wrong in the past for sure.
Thanks. I appreciate your honesty. Like, I can relate to that so much. I often get asked the question, how I do what I do and still have time to train, because I think a lot of people maybe not in as much of a fortunate position to be able to be quite flexible with their training, but a lot of people just don't get the balance right. And my answer to that often is that I just keep trying, and 90% of the time I don't get the balance right. And in our worlds where we're pouring our heart and soul into training to just find those marginal gains, we would love a little bit more time. But at the same time, life's a challenge and we wouldn't have it any other way. So yeah, we love a challenge. So keep it coming. And thanks for sharing. Okay, so you debuted at 2:16:52. Honestly, if I do that ever, I'll be the happiest person. I'll buy you a couple of beers or Diet Pepsis as you like. But pretty much, what do you think is possible for you? I know you said you're targeting Valencia. I'm actually targeting Valencia as well. You've come in and set the bar extremely high, but we all kind of know there's definitely more in the tank. You're 24, it was your debut marathon. You progressed so nicely throughout. Perhaps you stick to that strategy going forward. What sort of time would you be happy with at Valencia, and what sort of time do you think you can maximize out one day if you just keep consistent with training?
I'd say regarding Valencia, I will only know whether it was a good time or whether I'm happy with it at the end of the race. And I've always found that with especially cross country races, is always going into it, I would say, oh, I'll know how I've done at the end. So it might be that going into it, I'm not in 2:16 shape. I'm actually in 2:20 shape. And if I'm able to get to the end and get everything out of my body and my fitness at that time, then I'll be chuffed and I'll be really happy with myself. If I come out with a 2:12, the exact same. I'd be over the moon and chuffed if I think that that was the most I can achieve on the day. If I was in, say, 2:12 fitness, but I ran 2:40, then again, I'm probably not going to be too happy with myself. So, it's not necessarily the time that I'm worried about. It's about getting the most out of my fitness on that day. In terms of my overall looking years down the line, what is the absolute best I think I could do, or what would be the happiest, or the performance I'd be happiest with? I'd be lying if 2:10 hadn't crossed my mind in terms of could I go 2:09 XX? And obviously, the dream. Well, I've always had that. Well, ever since I knew what it was and understood it, representing my country and being a professional runner, that they've been the dream, and I don't think a day has gone past where I haven't dreamt of doing that. So that would always be the dream, just to keep improving. It might only be 1 second each time. It might be a couple minutes, just to keep chasing the next goal. But for me, I'd say my main limiting factor at the moment is my top end speed, my VO2 max. And that's what I'm working on at the moment, because my marathon time was really good and I'm absolutely chuffed with it. But I know that the room for improvement at this moment isn't that large, because I need to work on my overall my speed basically.
Okay, cool. So that kind of flows quite next nicely into the next question. And yeah, I mean, putting yourself on the map on it with a 2:16 debut is kind of like your dream of a GB vest. Could actually, there's a little taste of it. There's people are getting faster and faster each year. So 2:10 in 2, 3 years' time might need to be 2:09, 2:08. But who's to say that you can't keep driving and keep getting there? By then, the Olympic standard's probably going to be like 2:06 or something crazy. So yeah, the world gets faster and faster. I know, 2:20 isn't quite what it was a few years ago as well, because the world's getting faster, but it's still absolutely incredible in the big scheme of things. So yeah, don't underestimate, performances, whether you're hitting your goals, how good they are. Okay, so then if you need to improve your shorter distance stuff, I assume in the summer ahead that and Valencia is your next Gold Marathon, which is in December. You've got quite a lot of time to really ramp up that speed work, ramp up that VO2 max work. What is your plan for the next couple of months? Is it track races? Is it road races? And what do you think your best possibility of getting that dream of yours, that GB vest, what distance do you think is most likely for you to get that in?
So the next few months is, yeah, as you say, it's track stuff. So 1500 meters, 3K, 5K, they're going to be the main goals. I'd absolutely love to break 14 minutes for 5K. That'll probably be my main goal of the summer. Whether it will happen, who knows, but I'm going to give it a bloody good go. And then moving into winter, I've got some half marathons in September. October, November time is going to be kind of more strength stuff, cross country, road races. And then obviously, as you said, like the big one in December with Valencia Marathon. In terms of a GB vest, without getting too emotional, that would absolutely cap off my running journey. That would be the absolute dream. If you offered me a professional contract or a GB vest right now, I'd take the GB vest every single day of the week. It would be an absolute honor to represent my country. That'd be fantastic. But yeah, as you said, with the way that the running world is going at the moment, although I think that maybe sub 210 is possible for me one day, whether that's still anywhere near the sort of GB standard, who knows, it's unlikely. Because yeah, as you said, I mean, I think the Olympic standard for the 2028 LA games, I think it's already like 206.30 or something ridiculous. So I'm already like 10 minutes off, and that's crazy. But yeah, I, ever since I knew what it was, I've dreamed of representing my country in the sport. So yeah, I'd say the marathon is my best bet, just because I'd say the competition for places becomes less and less the further the distance. So I'd say that's probably my best bet in terms of there would just be less competition. And then I don't know if you ever watched the 2012 London Olympics, the Olympic trials. Chris Thompson, in the Olympic trial race, he just came out of nowhere and just had an absolute killer of a race in the last 5K. So that's the sort of thing that I'd think I'd, if I was ever going to represent Team GB, it'd be that sort of thing. Shock performance, maybe a really good day, similar to London this year. And then just kind of sneak my way in. I definitely wouldn't be a favourite, put it that way.
I remember that Chris Thompson performance clearly. I think he even surprised himself. He like walked across that line and just smashed that tape when he crossed it. It was very, very cool to see. Okay, so basically you're saying marathons your best possible bets. And I know on that note, you did a Instagram post the other day saying these are your PBs, what do people feel is my best PB? There's obviously, you know, power of 10 gives your runs a rating and stuff like that. I'm interested to know, across all your PBs, was your debut marathon actually your best possible performance across the distances?
I would say the marathon is, in my opinion, I think it's the best performance, just because it's the one that I've definitely put the most amount of work in. And comparatively, to see how many people didn't have good days, which I'm very lucky that it went my way on the day. I think that's definitely the result that I'm most proud of. Whether it's the most statistically best, I don't know. But yeah, it's definitely the result I'm proudest of. I even got it tattooed on my leg, so I mean, that's got to say something, right?
That's incredible. No, and the fact that was your first makes me think, like, you've got a lot of marathons ahead of you, and I actually think you built for the marathon distance. So who knows what you can achieve? I know, like, in Jake Ran to Japan's case, his marathon times are definitely not in line with his 5K, 10K. Like, his marathon pace is not too dissimilar to his 5K and 10K pace. So your marathon performance is best, but if you can increase that shorter distance stuff, then it opens up that whole ceiling. And maybe you're sort of like a similar case to the fact that your marathon stuff is always going to be better than your 5, 10K, whatever sort of shape you get into. But yeah, don't underestimate how important that is, as we both know, and you got a big summer coming up. Okay, so you often share that you pretty much survive off a few things, but rice pudding is definitely your staple ingredient. What is the best brand of rice pudding?
So I love rice pudding, and without going into too many details, I suffered with a bit of a stress fracture last year. So rice pudding became my absolute saving grace in terms of its protein, calcium, carbs. Like, it's just basically everything that I needed for recovery in one thing. Tesco's own brand rice pudding is by far the best. But if Ambrosia came knocking with a sponsorship, I probably wouldn't say no. It's also pretty good. But yeah, whack a teaspoon of some cherry jam or raspberry jam into that, and you've got an absolute, like, perfect bit of fuel for any sort of run, any session. Yeah, I absolutely love rice pudding. It's my favorite thing.
I think you're going to get a lot of people. I've never, ever tried rice pudding in my life, but I know you documented a lot. And now that you've put in such a good performance, I kind of like, Oh my word. Okay, maybe I should try this stuff. So I think after your London Marathon performance, the rice pudding sales at Tesco has probably gone through the roof. You should ask for some commission on that. But okay, so you covered off what's next. Thanks so much for that. We'll all keep an eye on you. It's been amazing chatting to you. But before I let you go, please tell us, what is the best way for people to follow you? You've got your Strava, your Instagram, your YouTube, you document everything. Would you just let us know sort of where people can find you?
Yeah, so I mean, my name's Cole Gibbons. I came up with this really, really creative username a few years ago, Cole Running. So a lot of thought went into that. But yeah, Cole Running on Instagram, Cole Running on YouTube. And if you want to see my kind of my PBs, my results, it's Cole Gibbons on Power of 10. And I run for Tunbridge AC. So yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And just remind me again, what is your sort of like tagline specific to Cole Gibbons? Do you have one? And what is it?
I don't really have one. I've tried many a time to kind of come up with one, but nothing's ever really stuck. Like, obviously, you've got like Ben's is Aspire to Run, yours is Boom Shakalaka. I've never really had anything that sticks. So I need to come up with one. Because one of my friends, Hugo Fry, his is Rice and Repeat. So Rice Pudding and Repeat would have been fantastic, but it feels a bit cheap to copy him. But yeah, when I come up with one, I'll let you know.
You'll know when it's right. You'll probably come up with one in like a 250-kilometer training week. It'll just come to you at some point and be like, oh, that's it. But no, honestly, it was an absolute pleasure getting overtaken by you at London. You absolutely smashed it. I'm so happy for you. You put in the work, and I can't wait to see what's coming your way. I'm sure I'll see a lot of races en route, but I will definitely see you at Valencia. Let's put in a big shift. We'll document it all on YouTube, I'm sure. And let's look to have a catch-up after that race too.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. All the best. Cheers, champ.